Off the Ball, GAA.
We just need to keep pushing forward, and the games that we have lost, we've only lost very narrowly by a point or 2 points in the last couple of years, and we just need to stick with it because we have been so close.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50 milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The theme of Gordon Darcy's piece yesterday was that Munster need to stop pretending that they are the team of the past. And for one night only, I think tonight, the team from 20 years ago are gathering for a gala dinner. Is that what I'm
right?
Of
sorts, yeah. Yeah, they're an anniversary dinner of sorts, yeah. For the 2006 Heineken Cup final, which is almost like rubbing in the face of the current team, like how good we were. It's a stark contrast, obviously, to what it was back then. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Quinny.
The ghosts of the past, do they haunt those teams who are trying to get back to that level, or are they supposed to be an inspiration? Are they totally irrelevant? Can you think about that Man United team that made the breakthrough? They seem burdened by the Busby team.
Busby was in the stands, wasn't he, when they got the trophy in after 27 years in 93. I was actually thinking about it with Liverpool, funny enough, as a, like, you know, all the era. I've seen something with like Fowler and McManaman recently. You have to imagine that as a fan base and expectations of a team that always wins and always comes true, you can't just play, you know, and have a good season on your own merits and finish third and build something for the future. The expectation's always there. So I do think past, like, generational success does hamper the development afterwards. But it also helps in other ways, obviously, because I was thinking about, like, even watching the Limerick under-20s last night, and they weren't great, but you kind of feel like Limerick will never not be a top team again, feel, because all of the kids growing up will have just, like, this batch of heroes that they will have will just mean that by just very natural process, more kids will play hurling, therefore they will remain a power.
Dublin under-20s knocked out of the Leinster Football Championship last night.
All the way through this, and how I used to make such claims about the Dubs never not being in an All-Ireland semi-final.
Westby, say my name is what I'm hearing from our producer this morning. He's gone, say my name. It's Westmeath. It's Westmeath. Put some respect on my name.
They've knocked them out of the minors and the under-20s.
Westmeath have obviously got their shit together. Louth have got their shit together underage. Kildare and Meath have had their stuff together for the last couple of years underage as well. So, the Dublin thing is very interesting. Talking to Dublin supporters are like, I told you this was going to happen. You were shiting on about breaking us up in two or four, and now here we are. We're a complete shambles. Told you this was happening. It was just a generational team that came through, and you wouldn't enjoy it for what it was. You had to bang on about the money.
But I love this whole thing. It's like, we shouldn't. Fair enough, the breaking in two, whatever. Let's not get into that. But the idea of, like,
it's just still dope, man.
We were looking at the evidence of what Dublin can do when they get their act together. Great, with an absolute generational team. Nobody thought they were going to continue to win six All-Irelands in a row. But what I thought was that if the organisation and structure is there, Dublin should never be away from the top table again.
No, exactly.
And because of all their natural advantages. But the idea to go back and go, look what happened, we're a shit show. It was always going to happen. It's like, why? Why? Don't just accept that. They shouldn't be a shit show. They should be, like, organised and well-run. And just because one visionary CEO or whatever his official title was retires shouldn't mean that the whole thing just collapses.
Yeah, they did just have a generational group of players though as well. They had some all timers come in at the same time, and like that, it's obviously not just completely the system plays a part in that, but there's going to be a drop off. That was going to happen
100%,
once they retired. Like that was always going to happen.
I do think though that, like, Paddy Andrews sat in that seat a couple of weeks ago and said he was involved with the development squads, and it's just too many people. You can't tell. No one actually gets any proper coaching. It's essentially crowd control because there's hundreds of kids involved, as opposed to the very elite, and they're getting specific coaching. And then there's a next tier who are hopefully going to join that elite at some point over the next couple of years, and you're thinking long term about those. So I'd say that strategically they've lost their way, and I think that probably to John Costello, it's not cause and effect he leaves, and it's like this has been in the post for a number of years. And the generational thing, obviously, they should still have a collection of athletes and footballers who have benefited from the success dividend, but maybe they've blown their success, and we'll see what happens. I think the demise of Dublin football is greatly overstated because they lose a couple of underage games.
No, but this will be a team that will go back to our initial example when we're talking about Munster, of a team that will be measured by what's come before. And I think that when this team goes on a bit of a run, and maybe they don't win Leinster this year, and maybe they win it next year, and that's actually a stepping stone achievement, it's going to be hard for that to be celebrated. It's going to be hard for them to enjoy it, because they'll feel like they have to
win an All-Ireland to justify.
It's almost like they have to kind of judge themselves by what's come before, rather than judging themselves on what this team is.
This will be a really interesting experiment to see if that's true, and if it's the same thing that's happening in Munster, because I actually think that Dublin football fans will come out in big numbers to support this team. Do you remember the team in the noughties was filling Croke Park for first round Leinster?
Yeah,
Tommy, and that's why all the games were in Croke Park for forever afterwards, because it was like, well, we need that again. And the crowd got lower and lower and lower and less interested as the team got inversely more in control of games. So I wonder if the Dubs will become that big drawing power once they are vulnerable, which they are now straight away, right? So they won't be in Croker until the Leinster final this year, right? And if they make that, will it be full? I suspect it will, because whoever they're playing against will think they have a chance of beating them. So it'll be more 50-50. But what happened with Munster is that the fans have turned away as well.
Yeah. There's a bit more of a kind of an apathy there that comes from, maybe it is that it isn't the glory days anymore, and it's a bit more of a chore going to see them, I think. It's also an expense. Like, it is, it's more of an every week thing than it is in GAA. I don't know how many home games a year that Thomond Park holds, but it is kind of a, you know, twice a month sort of endeavour, I suppose. So it is hard to kind of get that enthusiasm going when you don't really feel like there's a team there that are offering anything. I would say the team in the Dubs early 2000s team were that kind of, like, there was that sort of promise to them. There was that sort of, this could be the year. They were a probably not quite their team, but there was a likability or a
style.
Absolutely a style to them. But there was an excitement, I suppose, and there was a sense of it. I think Munster are not offering that at the moment. And I think what happened on Sunday, I just know from even just talking to Munster fans, people who would go to games regularly, Sunday was an interesting day on the WhatsApp. It was a sort of an eye roll rather than anger. It was a look how shit Munster are.
Yeah.
You know, it was that kind of thing. It wasn't this, like, absolute, I can't believe they capitulated like this. You would, if there was anger, like real anger there, this is a disgrace, McMillan has to go, we need room, I'd be a little bit less concerned. This was total apathy.
There was no surprise or shock at it, which is a really, really bad place to be.
Yeah.
I think it's after the 45-0, not much is going to surprise any supporters, but yeah, like, you'd expect if a Munster team go down 31-0 at halftime in the European Cup game, and sorry, not even the European Cup, the Challenge Cup, fans should be surprised and angry, as you say, and that wasn't the feeling at all, and that's probably the most concerning thing about it.
Tickets left for the Ulster game, I'm just on Ticketmaster at the minute. The South Terrace tickets are £25, the West Terrace are €31, and stand tickets are £37 for the Ulster home game, which is going to be a pivotal game in their season. It will help define whether or not they make European rugby next season in the Champions Cup or the Challenge Cup.
Yeah.
And it will define whether or not they are still alive in the competition. Here's the weird thing about what we've just watched is, like, if they were to suddenly find a bit of form, they could cause some damage in the knockout stages and totally transform how everybody thinks about them heading into next season.
The weird thing about Sunday is what they did was capitulate every time that the Chiefs got an attack in the first half. The overall balance of play, Munster were actually decent, I would say, at times. You know what I mean? They probably just didn't use the ball well enough, and they were far too sloppy. Far
is
too
the
sloppy.
Game not over when that happened?
No, I mean, even in the first half, like it was. It's what score is it? It's
31-0 at halftime.
Yeah, but it's 7-0 after 20 minutes, and it's an even game, and it's intercept try, second try.
Exeter didn't have to play at all.
Yeah.
Munster were giving them everything.
Even the silly try at the end was a bad turnover in the ruck. Like, you know, it was intercept, turnover in the ruck, and 56 missed tackles.
One last thing about the style of play thing is that something has happened in the game of rugby since the Six Nations where it's become good again. It's like Gaelic football's been transformed in such a short period of time. The winter was bleak and their games were awful, and then suddenly the Six Nations arrived and it was like, oh, actually this is how the new rules are supposed to be done. The best minds finally unveiled their attacking play, and Munster haven't seen any of that yet. They haven't, the home crowd hasn't been thrilled by a 47-44 victory. It's not like I'm going to bring the kids to watch a 9-6 game, which was what the winter was. So maybe something happens in the next few weeks. And
It's so easy to get fans back on site in terms of all you need is three wins in a row and suddenly everything's fine again. Yeah. It is really that simple. But as we've been saying, the style of play and how they're playing and maybe the attitude going into some games, it doesn't suggest that's going to happen.
Yeah, like they've lost three in a row now as well. I don't actually know if it's only three in a row, but three in a row since the Six Nations anyway.
Yeah, we talked about it yesterday. The playing against the wind the first half, for me, is just you're going out to see if you can give them a crack. And that's not the Munster mentality. You go out to, you should be going to Exeter thinking we're going to beat them.
Never give a sucker an even break.
Yeah, and we should be going out and hammering them. That was never going to happen, but that should be your attitude. You don't go saying we're going to let them get the lead in the first half and see if we can pull it back in a second.
Your connection to that Munster team is a local thing.
Yeah. So my family's from Killaloe. It's where I would have spent my summers. The reason I'm a Clare fan, as people will often question when they listen to the show and hear my accent. There was like Keith Wood and Anthony Foley were obviously my sporting heroes, I would say, when I was young. Two lads from Killaloe that obviously achieved the highest of the high in the game of rugby. Highest of the high in Irish rugby anyway, let's say. There's that quarterfinal problem. It was an unbelievable connection going back then. I remember going to, my uncle brought me to his home and in like early Heineken Cup, like 98, I think they were playing like Pontypridd, and just getting the old terrace, getting lost in it. You know, like, so I completely got separated from my uncle. I'm like down four steps from him. He's quite a tall man, so I could kind of see him. That was happy enough. But just being around that kind of like Limerick humour within the game, and O'Gara played really well that day, and people weren't really sure if he had it or not. It's still another year and a half or so before he kind of comes into the Ireland team. And that was my first kind of like Munster on the big occasion experience. But when Foley, I remember, I remember my granddad was sick in hospital in Dublin about a year before he died or so. Me and my dad would have went up to Donnybrook to see Anthony Foley playing for Ireland A, you know, in the day before the Five Nations game, Six Nations game, whatever it was. And Five Nations it would have been at the time. And then went into the hospital to see my granddad, and Brendan Foley is sitting in there beside him chatting to him, you know, like as he just went in to see him because he was obviously up for the match as well. Anthony's father, who obviously played for Ireland as well. And, you know, I remember that even just like really being obsessed with Anthony's career. He played for Ireland in 95, is kind of left out for a long time after that, goes and is captain Shannon as part of the five in a row team or the four in a row team. And during that time, we used to go up to the GA pitch in Killaloe and have a game of soccer usually, to be honest, but probably up with a football that day. And Anthony is doing his own little training session up the other end of the pitch. Or like, and someone says, go down and get a rugby ball. Do we have one? Do we have one? Someone goes down and gets a rugby ball. Anthony just abandons the training session and basically gives us a kind of a
tutorial a load of random local kids, like, you know what I mean? And I always remember that he was always very involved in the GA club and all, especially when his own kids were born and so on. But I always remember that day. It was just a special kind of cool thing, like, of this guy that we looked up to so much. So when the Munster thing happens, and the 2000 final against Northampton, 2002 against Leicester, all those amazing quarterfinal, semi-finals away in France, and disallowed tries and everything like that. It's just this personal feel, it's personal side to a more general fan odyssey, I suppose.
The heartbreak in the finals is so specific. In 2000, it's Pat Lam's Northampton, and Roger misses all the kicks, and they could easily have won.
Yeah,
and
it was 9-8 that game.
The next one is Neil Leicester. Back's
yeah.
Hand of God, where Munster are pushing at the very end of the game. It looks like they finally reached the level where they're able to overcome a World Cup winning pack, essentially, and they get cheated out of it. So there's like we shot ourselves in the foot, then there's the Thierry Henry style injustice and the level of outrage that we all had at that point. And now they laugh about it, ha ha ha, but yeah. It's still there, not forgiven. But they'd never be forgiven if they hadn't, like, Leicester would never have been forgiven if they hadn't got over if Munster hadn't subsequently got over the line. So there's like, it's like, imagine if Mayo had won the All-Ireland.
Yeah.
At the end of that Dublin era. That's what Munster winning was like, except much bigger.
It really was, and
for six, five counties.
Because it's for five counties, yeah. Six. You've forgotten about Kerry because they don't play in hurling. But yeah, like it's exactly like that. Again, we were talking off air because Dara's a bit younger than us, about how big the then Heineken Cup was compared to what it is now. And it's still like this big tournament and we can still get into it. But it's just this, you didn't have to go looking for it. You didn't have to be listening to the sports shows to know what was happening in the Heineken Cup back then. It was nearly the biggest thing at the time. It was absolutely huge. And then when they get to 06, and that's such an interesting thing in itself, because have Munster missed their chance? Are they a little bit kind of over the hill? And Leinster have that amazing win in Toulouse that year in the quarterfinal, and Leinster have been a massive disappointment basically in the professional era up until this point, and they beat Toulouse in one of the greatest games rugby ever played. And then we have the semi-final between them in Lands End Road, and Munster win it, and they win it easily, and it's an incredible rebirth. And I'm in Australia in 2006, and we're in Melbourne, and there's this kind of sense of like, where am I going to find this to go to this game? We're going halfway across the city somewhere, you find a place, you're thinking, will this place even be open? Will they be shown it? And we walked in, and talk about how big this was, you know, and trying to put a sense in it. You see the pictures of Limerick when they cut back from the game on Sky Sports, during the final, they constantly are cutting back to a street in Limerick. It's absolutely thronged, like it was red. I walked into this pub in Melbourne, not knowing whether this would have any atmosphere or whatever. And it's all just Munster jerseys and Cork GA jerseys. And it's just a sea of red. And it was an incredible atmosphere. So we're watching the game anyway, and I'm with like a couple of people who don't necessarily aren't that big into rugby, maybe one or two are, and not necessarily Munster fans, and then like the rest of us. So, but you get into it, it's a great game, it's really close and so on. But then at the end, there was just this moment where it's Foley who's coming up to lift the trophy, and you kind of feel, it's like, one, it's been this 6 year, 7 year really long journey to get there, and then two, it's the guy I was just talking about at the start of this chat who's lifted the cup for it, and it's from home. And then I'm almost thinking, you know, when you're away, you're the other side of the world, and it's like, I've only gone about 3-4 months at this age. It's not as if like I've emigrated, but like, you're kind of thinking, all the family are at this match, like, you know what I mean? So it's like the only time in the whole time I was away, I'm like desperately trying to ring my dad, you know what I mean? And I get him like an hour later or whatever, when they finally leave the ground or whatever like that. And it's just this kind of like, you're honestly, it might have something to do with the fact that it was 3 o'clock in the morning, but like total tears running down the face, like, you know what I mean? So it was, it's funny. It was the first when, like, obviously in 2016, when we got the shock and horrible news about Anthony, I remember I wrote about that day, just as a kind of a way of dealing with it later on that day, like, and it was just that sort of like, it was, you know, tears in 2006, tears today kind of thing, like, so, that's it really. It's just, it was such a relief. I don't, like, I have to say, like, I've been at Clare winning All Ireland's, I've been at everything, and it's like some of the best days of my life. Like, I mean, just turning around in Croke Park and looking up the stands at one point in 2013 when you kind of knew that Clare had it won extra time was like loads of those amazing memories, but I don't think I've ever felt better about a sporting result than that. The 2006 game, it was amazing.
And that's why what's happening at the moment is so important, because so many people feel that way and they have this visceral connection with the team, and that's replicated. Obviously you got a very specific thing with Foley, but like, they were a team largely of the local land, yeah. And for whatever reason that's broken, and we continue to talk about that. We do need to move on and talk about another team who play in red who are in a death spiral, and that's Liverpool.
They really should, yeah.
I don't know if Liverpool are going to qualify for the Champions League next season. Like, and yet there's bits in the game where you're like, oh, he's actually playing well now. He's playing well. Now, I was flicking between the two games, and we'll talk with Graham about the Barcelona Atletico game later on. So maybe I've got a missense of this. Paris Saint-Germain, obviously, clearly the best team by a mile. But there's still parts of Liverpool where you're like, if they just had a plan around what the team was supposed to be doing, yeah. These players look good. Like, the players they signed who were playing last summer, looked like they were ballers.
Yeah.
With just no tactical or...
Well, like, we were saying at the start of the season, we were having the argument to who had the deeper squad, Liverpool or Arsenal. Now it seems like a non-argument because Arsenal have obviously kicked on the way they have, but on paper, Liverpool have a really, really good team. And, like, it's an expensive team too. But it just seems like, I don't know, is it tactics or is it just they don't... Every time they concede a goal, it really feels like fingers are being pointed and no one's on the same page. And, like, look, there's no shame in losing 2-0 to PSG. Like, to PSG are the best team in the world, arguably. But yeah, no shots on target. I didn't think they really threatened them at all throughout the game. I didn't see them scoring a goal. Hard to see them even scoring a goal in the second leg. Definitely, I don't think they've very little chance of pulling it back. And yeah, this is the thing.
The only thing is Anfield and so on, and you never know. Like, some mad things can happen in a game of football, but they should have been hammered last night.
Yeah,
it should have been four. Like, and it's never six, but it actually should have been six.
Yeah.
You know, like, not to mention like a stonewall penalty in the last minute that would have ended the tie. And it was strange that it wasn't given, I think, because, again, it was like one of those pushing them back to get away with the Premiership, but Nuno Mendes was running at full pace. And you know by the way he falls that is not a, like, he is pushed over.
Yeah.
It's a definite penalty. I can't believe it wasn't given.
No reason to go down. He would have scored anyway.
Yeah.
A good chance of scoring.
Like, he had just blasted past Kanate. So it was like, it was obvious. Like, he was going at an uncontrollable pace. If he gets a foul, he's going to go down. But anyway, that's a very specific thing in a game that, like, PSG should have scored five or six at least. Liverpool changed the formation. Like, that's a sign of desperation. They drop Salah, which, like, is fine on its face, but, like, put in an equally poor performance without him, which, again, just feels like he comes out and says, I'm being scapegoated after the Leeds game. Whether that, like, I don't think he has been, but he felt like he was last night because they brought on four subs at one stage and he wasn't one of them.
They had him warming up in the first half as well, which I thought was a little bit strange. It was like,
maybe he's doing that himself to just, I'm ready.
I just feel like Slot's continuously trying to make a statement because he's out of his depth and hasn't a clue what he's doing at the moment. And it was like...
Does that mean he was never any good and last season was a bit of a fluke?
I think last year was...
Or is he in his own head in the aftermath of that? Is it as black and white as actually they got the wrong guy and somehow he managed to win the league last season?
I kind of think so, yeah.
Do you think, yeah?
I kind of think so. I kind of think it's looking like that, yeah. It's not to dismiss him winning the league, but it was a team that I think had the potential to win the league. I think Man City were going for five in a row last season. People forget that. We quickly forget how quickly things change at Man City. There was an assumption that Man City were going to drive on and win five in a row last year, and they collapsed like they had what Liverpool had done this season. Happened to Man City. They were a non-factor, and Arsenal proved themselves not ready, and Liverpool went out in a very early run and ran out of legs as the season went on and actually were found out. They had a system that people weren't expecting because they'd been playing against Klopp's Liverpool for so long.
And ever then since.
By February, or by January even, I think, teams had figured out how to play against Slots Liverpool.
Ever since Arne Slot
was already won.
Went celebrating with Wayne Lineker in Wayne Lineker's bar, things have he broke
one
the seal.
One of his trips to Ibiza, was it?
Yeah. Well, they'd already won the league at that point.
Okay.
When can you do that? You have to win it twice and then you get to the...
You can do it in the summertime when the season's over.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, you can't just do it during the season. It's like, here, look, he's a party.
Just think, like, there's a part of me that thinks actually the shape of the team last night would make sense long term.
Well, I was wondering.
Because Frimpong and Kerkez could be good wing backs, and
you've got those three good central midfielders.
A little bit more room. Yeah. And, you know, like, Grant, I completely understand that. One, you haven't got the centre backs to do it at the moment because of the way you've built the team. So you're relying on literally just those three guys. And then, secondly, it's like, I think but you Graham can't Burke just throw there. Them in all of a sudden.
Or McAllister could play there.
McAllister as an old school sweeper.
Yeah. Or as one of those, like, you know, because. Obviously, you need everybody to be able to defend from set pieces, but if you have somebody who is dynamic and has that running, hardcore running ability, but also he can dribble, and suddenly then that becomes a... Having possession, when your centre-backs have possession, is a good thing as opposed to a negative.
Maybe. I can't see that one. But my point is, though, like the 3-5-2 or the 3-5-1-1, whatever, might make sense. But you can't just suddenly do it in the quarterfinal of the Champions League and expect it to be... ready to go. Like, I just, again, it just reeked
the
desperation.
The scene in the first half of Virgil, like, over the halfway line, where am I supposed to be? That's all like, ooh, the bit. Well, you guys are all supposed to be professionals and you know how to do this because you've been studying football all your lives. Like, actually, it is more difficult. Because there are those teams who seem to be able to switch between this, right? And it's not a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of famous examples now. Yeah. But
that is ultimately on the manager as well. That is his job. Get them on the same page. People need to understand what they're doing. That is literally his number one job.
I know everybody's been away on international duty, but there has been a long time where you could have put this into the...
Yeah.
You know, so I'm just sending you a little video here. Keep an eye on this. We're going to go 3-5-2 for the Paris Saint-Germain game.
Yeah. They play at the weekend. They lose 4-0. Obviously, a lot of the build-up to this game is we're going to play a three grand. Salah's not going to be a part of the conversation. There's a dressing room dynamic to all of that as well.
They could have done that, actually. In fairness, that's a good point. They could have done it at the weekend as well.
Can I just give you their fixture list here? Carol Leary's pointing out it's awful over the next few weeks. So they have Fulham at home, PSG second leg, obviously, Everton in Hill Dickinson, Palace away, Man United in Old Trafford, Chelsea, and then Villa away. Like, they could feasibly lose
one game after that, yeah.
3-4 games there.
They have, talking earlier about the ghosts of the past. This is a team that won the title last year. So obviously there's a little bit of, there's ghosts there, even though it's, you know, much the same team. They haven't lost too many. And they can't lose 4-0 on a Saturday. And then 2-0 that should have been 6-0 on the Tuesday to anyone. You know what I mean? They have to have this. It's not like, oh, well, there were two hard games. It was Man City and PSG. So that's okay. We're miles and miles and miles off it. Like, you know what I mean? You said they're not going to get into the Champions League. Darvish just after going through their fixtures. I don't trust Chelsea, right? I just don't. I think Chelsea are going to drop points continuously over the course of the rest of the season. Brentford aren't very far off. Everton aren't very far off. They need to keep an eye on these teams. Like, seriously, are Liverpool going to automatically pick up points between now and the end of the season with the way they're playing?
I don't know.
They play Brentford as well before the end of the season, so.
A Champions League 6-pointer.
Yeah.
No, Isak will come back in and.
I don't know, though. To do what?
Well, to ease the burden on Ekitike, who
looks tired.
Definitely has come off the boil a little bit.
Yeah.
So if you're a Liverpool fan, do you want Arne Slot gone?
Oh, they're shocking, Jared. They're hard to watch. There's no style of play. There's no, like, there was that one point last night, actually, where McAllister just dribbled through the middle and played a ball I think it was Ekitike, it should have been, and look for the, and it fell apart. But I was thinking, like, that's like, I haven't seen you try that all season. I haven't tried, it's the same thing. Yeah. Honestly, they're so easy to play against that this, like, non-factor of an attack that got cleared easily by PSG massively stood out to me last night because it was like, wow, I don't remember you ever doing that. I think all the reporting has been, from people close to Liverpool that FSG are not looking to get rid of Slot. They would rather not do it. It is not the current plan. Things can go a lot worse between now and the end of the season. Yeah. And I think since I've heard that, things have got a lot worse since the international break. Yeah. And I can't think there's much room. And even, look, you don't want to be judging things off social media, as we all know. But there was like vitriol of a level that you don't normally see on social media, which if you pass down to the more normal people, means that more normal people are getting angry.
Yeah. I'm not sure it works like that. I think it's the match going, the people who will dictate whether or not,
yeah,
what happens and how quickly things happen. Now, look, again, things can turn around pretty quickly. They have really good players who just looked like they weren't sure what they were supposed to be doing. Like Gravenberch, who looked such a Rolls Royce of a player last season, was uncertain last night. But Gravenberch, Szoboszlai and McAllister as a three in midfield playing that system, yeah, for the rest of the year could easily click.
It could happen, yeah.
You know,
it's
a great midfield, like on paper.
And Wirtz looks like something really special there. I just don't know what it is. Exactly.
The first goal, though, obviously, it's a big deflection and you're unlucky that it's a goal, right? But the build-up to that, the four or five passes beforehand, Liverpool players were running towards the ball like a swarm. It was weird. It was a weird way, it was something you just don't normally see in top level football. And this is a Champions League quarter final with the champions of England. And it was like as if they just didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know what their assignments were. Yeah. And that's bizarre. You know, when you're watching it live, I kind of thought, there's something weird about that, and didn't think too much of it. And then when you're watching it again at half time, you're realizing it's like, the lads are just leaving one player and all running to another. It's just so easy to play around.
Even you mentioned Nuno Mendes kind of penalty. That could have been a penalty. Like, why is Konate ended up on Nuno Mendes in midfield on the wing? That should never happen.
Yeah.
That should, like, there's only one way that matchup is going. It ends up with Nuno Mendes in the box.
Now, Paris Saint-Germain are great to watch. They've been one of the great things.
On the bridge,
one of the great flowerings of sports washing has been the genius of this team. It's like, and finding a manager who's actually able to do what they're supposed to do has been a really interesting, that you see one of the Chelsea defence mechanisms of them saying that it's okay to have Liam Rossini or whoever manage the team, because in the past the manager has not correlated largely to success or define success statistically. It has been the team to spend the most, win the most, and Chelsea have really taken that experiment and made it real, and you know it's backfired on them horribly. So
I don't think poor managers can build dynasties though, and that's the, if you look at what Pep Guardiola has done, you look at, like, fine, Jurgen Klopp only won one title, he also won a Champions League, got the final, and rebirthed Liverpool, right?
Yeah.
I think his achievement, but Luis Enrique, you know, whatever it might be, whereas you can always have an Arne Slot win the league, you can always have a Avram Grant or Di Matteo, whoever it was, Avram Grant got to a final, Di Matteo won a Champions League.
Ranieri
obviously winning the league with the soon to be League One Leicester. I was looking at 10 years on.
Six point deduction was upheld yesterday. So
yeah, how sad is that? Like, it's 10 years and the drama that's happened there since, obviously, with the owner and everything like that, and that tragedy. Like, it's just unreal. It's almost like as if they sold their soul.
Yeah.
You know, if this was a bad fictional film, they'd have sold their soul for that moment in 2016, and everything that could go wrong goes wrong after that.
Mephistopheles is the original of that story, yeah. It was a good play. What happens? Who comes
to Liverpool? I don't have any more opinions on Leicester.
Who's next up? Xabi Alonso, I think.
And it just happens.
Yeah.
And actually, the three at the back last night was like, oh, we
setting them up.
We know somebody who's really good at that. Arne, that was a good idea. Thank you. We have the thought experiment. Now, it didn't work exactly because we don't have the centre-backs, but we'll just buy all the centre-backs this summer that we should have bought last year, and everything else is actually set up for that.
Playing a team.
Strength and depth in the wings.
I think that it's a great team. It's just the wrong man at the helm. I think that's it.
I think that Salah they should have gotten more out of him this year. A lot of that is on Mo Salah. I don't think it's as straightforward as it's all Salah's problem. But I think you saw last night that there's something fundamental wrong with that team that isn't because they have to play everything through Salah. Yeah. I think they should have adapted better to him and got more out of him. However, I do think ultimately being able to pick a team based on not like without having to worry about one superstar is probably going to help them. And even last night, would it have been better if there wasn't this feeling of this massive elephant in the room of, you know, your biggest ever player or one of the biggest ever players sitting on the bench and not being brought on when you make four substitutions 2-0 down?
So the big changes are Salah goes, Slot goes, they spend some money on beefing up a midfield. If you're going to have three midfielders, you need subs.
You might need the
get Harvey Elliott back in.
there's a argument again I've heard from, maybe it's like Rory Smith is a Liverpool fan and a couple of other journalists that would absolutely say that they need six new players this summer, having just spent the most money of any team in the world last summer, and that's bad squad building. But they obviously need a replacement for Salah. They need two centre backs, I think. Andy Robertson will go. They'll need another left back. There's a lot of building still to do, and they might not have the money for it.
But actually, you could keep Robertson in the system if he's got to play a load. So you'll actually, he'll end up getting 30 minutes in every second or third game, and that would justify keeping him. You know, there are definitely some injury issues. Carl Dillon says, "Hey gents, big sea change on the profile physically of the player needed in the Premier League. Hughes privately acknowledged that they got the profile wrong last summer. Carl O'Leary is saying that the no penalty for the push by Konate at the end was egregious scandal." And there was another one from Carl, which I was going to read out about what happens in the competition at this point forward. Barca, Real, PSG are the perfect team for Bayern. Physically weak and they don't hold their shape. They will struggle more versus an Atleti or an Arsenal. It is Arsenal versus Atleti if they go through in the semi-final.
Yeah. Hard to see Arsenal not going through now after weathering the storm on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Bayern looked amazing. They just really did. But, you know, still, I think they'd rather not concede. You wouldn't rule Real Madrid totally out just because of who they are and because you feel like there's always going to be some sort of drama.
Yeah.
But the home teams are all going to be leading next week. So if we're ever going to have a quarterfinal of no drama, it will be this year. Four away wins was a pretty big deal this week. But Champions League always delivers.
Yeah. Liverpool.
No, Liverpool are home now. Oh, sorry. Yeah, of course, sorry. Got that.
Three
out of four, right.
Is there something in the left...
35%, it's an A grade, Mick.
The left footers this year in Champions
Only
League.
Only college.
Left foot players.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Is there something in the tougher to defend? If you're a young player and you can play with both feet when you're coming up, focus on the left foot.
Carl Dillon's your man to talk about the ambidextrousness.
Yeah. Elisa, Dembele, Kvaratskhelia.
How did Palace not win the league when they had all those players?
Yeah, I know. It's insane.
What was going
it's
on?
Insane. Like, he,
well, Elisa, they were never higher than 12th.
They were never fit together at the same time.
Yeah, and he's obviously gotten a bit better since he moved, but he's...
I didn't know now. Elise was one of those good players that you thought was going to move up the league. I don't think we knew he was going to be like the best player for Bayern Munich.
I think Bayern Munich probably
thought that.
I think if Eze hadn't got injured, we'd be like, oh, look at that. I think that's just because of what he would have done against Villa those times.
Odds
for the next Liverpool manager, Alonso's 3-1 on, so it looks like a dead start at this stage. I also don't think there's any guarantee that Alonso's just going to be able to implement what he did at Leverkusen. And not what happened at, you know, because what's Virgil going to do now? Is Virgil going to be like, yeah, I'm happy to be exposed as a centre back playing in midfield week in, week out at the end of my career?
Season. Yeah.
Hmm? He's played every minute this season.
You'd imagine he'd get something out of Ertz as well.
The commenter there made a point about Hughes. Like, that's a big elephant in the room at Liverpool. Like, you know, is it a case of getting rid of the manager or does there need to be, are the people picking the manager the wrong people?
You give them another go.
You look at who they brought in, another go. Are they going to spend another 400 million?
Well, they will, yeah, probably. Because
they'll get it right at some point, you think, with one of the sides.
Profitable, well-run club. So they have the ability to do that if they want.
Not if they're in the Europa League next year.
Yeah. Like, they were unlucky with Isak as well, I think. He literally scored a goal as he was injured. So, you know, he could have hit form had he not been injured. Wirtz, like you say, I think he's gotten better. There's a player in there once he's in a system that suits him. I think he potential to be one of the best in the league in his position. So I don't think the signs have been terrible, but it when you've price tags as big as they were over the summer, there is a certain expectation there. I think I've said it a few times. I think the team is really, really good. I just think they're not on the same page.
Is there any way Slot is able to say, look, it was a season of tragedy, we just had to get through it?
Yeah.
We didn't get through it as well as we thought we would. And they give him the opportunity next season? Or do they say, look, it was a season of tragedy, you did great for us, but we need to freshen things up here and we need somebody who's, you know, not just stunk the joint out. So off you go.
I think if he leaves, I think Liverpool fans will ultimately say, we got a title, you know, the most awful thing happened in the summer and the team and management were dealing with that all year. And even as they were getting over it, but as they were dealing with their grief, I suppose, they fell into a funk that you can't get out of and you can't change mid-season. And maybe the work wasn't done over the summer for very, very understandable reasons. But it doesn't mean he's the right man. I don't know if this can be lifted. I think you get to a certain point that it's very hard to turn around from.
Yeah. Are Villa going to win tonight?
I don't know if they'll win tonight. I think they'll win the tie. They've beaten Bologna twice in the last 2 years. They only won 1-0 earlier in the season at Villa Park, but they dominated that game. I actually saw the highlights of it again yesterday. It feels like years since they played, so yeah. I am looking forward to it. This has been the longest, because of the FA Cup round, it's been, for a lot of teams, the longest international break of all time.
Yeah, but it's been great for them because players are coming back from injury.
Yeah,
they're going to finish the top five now.
I don't know if Tielemans went with Belgium in the end, I hope not, but... or certainly hope he didn't play too much, but it'd be nice to see him back and fully ready to go. John McGinn obviously did play for Scotland, but he's changed the game since he's come back for Villa. But you like to think, like, Watkins rested. It'll be interesting to see. He could have a big last month of the season if he has any kind of a... He looked tired. And he's a player that needs a little bit of confidence in front of goal, I think, like that, but also needs to be able to do all the other things he does other than score goals, which is better than most people think it is.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
With Viagra Connect 50-milligram film-coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150-milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
Off the Ball, GAA.
We just need to keep pushing forward, and the games that we have lost, we've only lost very narrowly by a point or 2 points in the last couple of years, and we just need to stick with it because we have been so close.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.